lucky. Glad we're out here at Parkview Field today and not yesterday, because it would have been just a bit wet if we'd have tried to do this yesterday. Broadcasting live from Parkview Field in downtown Fort Wayne, it is the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch, who is here on site, and the Colts at bat happening tonight. If you don't have your tickets, there's still tickets available. You can get them and come in 5:35. Everything will get started, including an autograph session with Colts running back Nyheim Hines. He will arrive here just before 5:30, and we will have him right on the Sports Rush as soon as he arrives here at Parkview Field. We'll get a chance to visit with Colts running back Nyheim Hines. They're setting up some activities, some tents. They've got everything out here in the center field concourse. So, like I said, get your tickets, come on out to the game, and be a part of a Thirsty Thursday. Great weather. It's warm, it's sunny, and, well, you'd say a little bit of a breeze, but of course, when we've got things that we don't want to have blown all around, it feels like more than a little bit of a breeze. And in fact, you can probably hear in the background a little bit of the wind blowing. I don't know if it's coming in my microphone or what, but I can hear the wind blowing around.
I'm doing my best to try to shield mine when I'm not talking, but yeah, it is very, very windy this afternoon.
The problem is it's blowing right from behind me, so it's like the same direction as my voice, which means it's almost impossible for me not to have the wind hitting me. There's no shield or anything behind us, but we've got a big show coming up at 4:35. We'll talk Pacers TV play-by-play man Chris Denari. Of course, we know the Pacers are going to pick number 6. Thought it was kind of interesting that the Pacers have already gone out on social media and started to post different names of guys that they believe will be available at number 6. I saw a mock draft today, and Jaden Ivey was the name tied with the Pacers. I think that was Jason McIntyre from Fox Sports who actually had Jaden Ivey going to the Pacers at number 6, with Keegan Murray going at number 5 just above them. But we'll talk to Chris Denari about the offseason for the Pacers and what are some of the things we can expect to happen with the Pacers this offseason. Also on the way, we've got Tommy Shegler in our second hour. It's our weekly visit with Parkview Sports Medicine's Tommy Shegler. So we'll have that coming up just after Nyheim Hines at 5:20. Caleb, first time to a Colts at bat. I'm trying to think if you've been here before.
I was not here in 2019. That was the last time they did it, right?
Yeah, I think, trying to think if this is the fourth or fifth edition of Colts at bat, because the 2020 season, of course, never happened. 2021, the season got started late, and of course promotions were very limited because we were still just coming out of the pandemic. It's been, 3 years since we've had the last Colts at bat. I'm trying to think who the players were that were here the last time we had Colts at bat. I remember...
Was it a tight end for one of them?
I remember talking to Jack Doyle one year. Trying to remember who else we've had here. 468-62 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 468-62, if you can remember who visited during a Colts at bat. Darius Butler was here 1 year. T.Y. Hilton, I think, was here 1 year. But it always kind of coincides at the same time of year. It's usually about the third week of May when the Colts are having OTAs happening down in Indianapolis. It makes it easy. The players are on hand. They put one of them onto a helicopter. He zips up here, spends a couple of hours with the fans in Fort Wayne, and ends up back in Indianapolis by 9:30. And, of course, also being here tonight, we're going to have the cheerleaders. We're going to have Blue, the mascot. So plenty of fun activities here at Parkview Field for Colts at bat as we broadcast live up until 6 o'clock. You know what's going on today? Day number 1 of the PGA Championship. Not a good day for Tiger Woods. He struggled with a lot of his approach shots and ended up, I think he ended up with like 4 over par. So he's not in a great position heading into tomorrow. Now, the guy who is in a great position actually played with Tiger today, and that's Rory McIlroy. McIlroy had it working with the putter. his driving was unbelievable. He was drilling the ball farther than anybody today and putting it right in the middle of the fairways. But then he also didn't have a putter that let him down, which at times we've seen Rory struggle with the putter. He ended up with a 5-under 65 and is all alone at the top of the leaderboard in the PGA Championship. And, of course, one of the big groups that's out this afternoon in Southern Hills Country Club down in Tulsa is Jon Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, and Colin Morikawa. And so they got a late start. Tiger's group with Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, they went out this morning. And so tomorrow they'll flip-flop, and you'll have Tiger, Rory, and Jordan in the afternoon, and then Morikawa and Scottie Scheffler will be part of the morning group tomorrow. But Tiger didn't look like he felt too well after the round ended. I saw the highlights of Tiger finishing up his round, and it looked like there were some times he was maybe giving a little bit of a grimace. So not sure that this will be his week. He might not make the cut. But the PGA is happening. Who do you like in the PGA? Let us know at 46862. Oh, man, do I wish it could be October 8th already. I wish we could have October 8th right now, because that is a date I've already got marked on my calendar. You should have it marked on your calendar if you haven't, because October 8th. Caleb, I don't know if you know what is happening on October 8th, but I hope you've got your calendar marked for October 8th. Do you know what?
Yeah, the University of Alabama and Texas Agricultural and Mechanical University will play a football contest.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
A&M is agricultural and mechanical?
Yeah.
I thought it was military.
No.
That's right.
Or TAMU for short.
And it's going to feature Nick Saban versus Jimbo Fisher, and these two are going at it. I don't know, you know, how much of this is genuine, how much of it is like WWE just setting up the big fight for October 8th, but I'll tell you what, it's entertaining. Yesterday? I saw it last night.
Late last night.
I'm not exactly sure when Nick Saban came out and basically made the accusation that Jimbo Fisher paid more money for his recruiting class than anybody else, and it was unfair the amount of money and the player pool that Jimbo Fisher apparently was drawing from to pay his players. In a nutshell, that's what Nick Saban said. Now, you know, Nick Saban certainly had the advantages in recruiting for many, many years, and so whether this is somebody who's a little bit upset or bitter that he's been out-recruited and that he doesn't have the top-rated recruiting class, or if this is something that he has some concrete facts about, but what he said was that Jimbo Fisher basically had a pocket full of cash, and he was doling it out to a lot of the top recruits, and that is how Texas A&M came up with this great recruiting class. Well, guess who responded? Jimbo Fisher. And he said today, now let me get this right. I want to quote this. You coach with people like Bobby Bowden and you learn how to do things. You coach with other people and learn how not to do things. There's a reason I ain't went back and worked for him with opportunities. Don't want to be associated with him. And, of course, that's a reference of Nick Saban. So, you know, it's funny, Caleb, because you don't know if this is just a great PR stunt because everybody's buying in, or if this is actually legitimate that these two are right now in a big feud. But it certainly makes October 8th, when Texas A&M visits Alabama, an intriguing date on the calendar.
And it's already been a marquee matchup a handful of times since Texas A&M moved from the Big 12 to the SEC a decade ago. But after last year and A&M pulling the upset and now these offseason comments, this is the stuff that they say it just means more, right, in the SEC. That's kind of the saying. Well, with this, you have basically shots fired between two of the top coaches. And this is interesting because it's a new era in college football. And Jimbo Fisher's clearly adapted well, having the top-ranked, highest-ranked recruiting class ever. And we'll see how Nick Saban can strike back.
Well, in Texas A&M, it's not like all of a sudden they had the NIL and Texas A&M jump from nowhere to number one. Texas A&M under Jimbo Fisher, what did they do? They went from like 11th to 8th to 4th to 2nd. Yeah. I mean, they've slowly progressed up the chain in the recruiting rankings, and now they are the number one recruiting class, and apparently that doesn't rest real well with Nick Saban. So that is October 8th. Get the popcorn ready, because that is going to be one you want to have on your calendar and you do not want to miss. Texas A&M at Alabama. By the way, when you talk about the SEC and it just means more, of course, football is king down in Southeastern Conference country. What is the best rivalry right now in the SEC? Ooh. Is it Alabama Georgia? I mean that.
Yeah.
But that hasn't been a traditional rivalry, and aren't they in opposite? Are they in opposite divisions?
Yes.
Are they in the same division?
We'll see how it plays out if the SEC keeps their divisions, right? I mean, this completely transforms college football if conferences scrap the division.
Well, and that college football made that ruling today that they've kind of changed the structure of what will be allowed for championship games. And I think it's the Pac-12. I saw something scroll on my TV screen quickly that the Pac-12 is going to pit their top two teams against each other. It's not going to be the division winners against each other for the championship. Now, it'll be interesting, Caleb, because it seems to me like in the Big Ten that the power is weighted to the east. You know, you've got Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, everybody like that, all part of the eastern side of the Big Ten. And so what will the Big Ten do? Will we have an Ohio State-Michigan rematch for the Big Ten championship, or will the Big Ten keep it as best of the west, best of the east, and match them up in Indianapolis?
Well, let's just put it this way. Northwestern is probably hoping and praying that they keep the divisions, because they're not going to have a shot after this if they realign and just go on the best win percentage model.
Wouldn't you think that almost anybody in the West is probably hoping they keep it?
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
yeah.
Iowa, Purdue. I mean, anybody who falls into that. Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Nebraska, who has not been competitive
right.
most of the time, but they've made a Big Ten championship game.
And speaking of not being competitive, Illinois. But, yeah, anybody in the West right now, they look at the power over in the East, and they're like, boy, you know, we kind of felt like we just had to win one really big game to maybe win the Big Ten championship. Now, we might not even get into the Big Ten championship. It'll be interesting to see how they play this out. But best rivalry in the SEC. I don't even know. I'm trying to think. You know, Alabama-LSU used to be a pretty big one. But now that you got Brian Kelly, and I don't know, you've gone through a couple of coaches at LSU, if it's still the same rivalry, if they're still the same juice. Because what I'm thinking and where I'm going with this, Texas A&M and Alabama may just have taken over as the best rivalry in the SEC with the last 24 hours on social media. I mean, that's the power of social media. You may have completely shifted the paradigm, and you may have a new rivalry that has become the greatest rivalry in what is arguably the best conference for football in the country, in the SEC. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. All right, so last night, of course, I said yesterday that I think Dallas is going to win the series against Golden State. I'm not backing off of that, but last night, certainly not a good night for the Dallas Mavericks. Luka Doncic didn't have too good a night. Maybe that picture of him drinking a beer, maybe that was actually yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that happened. That was basically a breakfast beer since
it wasn't yesterday. It was like an old picture that someone posted yesterday, and everybody took off with it, and it went viral saying, oh, Luka's out having a beer for breakfast on game day. It was not yesterday, but maybe it was. The way he played, he ended up hitting just 6 of 18 shots, 3 of 10 from distance, just 20 points. I think that was the lowest point total he's had in any game so far in the playoffs. And the Warriors, meanwhile, used their depth and their balance. They had all 5 starters score in double figures. Looney ended up 5 for 5, 10 points. When you're getting that kind of output from Looney, who really you don't expect hardly any scoring from. He's pretty much out there to defend and to rebound. He ends up being a double-figure scorer, and they have seven double-figure scorers in total, led by Steph Curry with 21. And then who led them in rebounding? Did you see the stats?
Yeah, double-double.
Steph Curry, yeah, double-double. Beast, 21 points, 12 rebounds.
Well, it makes sense because you have so many guys shooting threes that you're going to have longer rebounds in the NBA.
And, yeah, and then the other thing is the matchups. They put Wiggins on Doncic. They put Draymond on Brunson. And so you took those guys away from the basket. So I guess it cleared space maybe for Curry to kind of clean up on some of those deep rebounds. But Curry with 12 boards, 21 points, and the Warriors roll 112-87. That is a 25-point win in game one. But you know what we've seen so far in the playoffs in the NBA? That it doesn't matter. You can win by 40, and it doesn't matter. The next game, it could flip. And so I'm still sticking with the Mavs. Based on what you saw game one, your feelings about this series, short series, long series, I know you were expecting the Warriors to wrap this one up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I had Warriors in five. I still feel that way. Look, it's next to impossible to beat the Warriors at the Chase Center. And if they went at home and split in Dallas in between games three and four, they went in five. It's that simple. And I think it'll set up this way. Look, if you're going to shoot 56% from the field, no one's going to be able to beat you. And when the Warriors have that balance, they don't need Steph Curry to score 30-plus a night like last season or in years past. They have so much balance. They have so much depth between Otto Porter Jr., Jordan Poole. Iguodala should be back here maybe in the next couple of games. Not that he's going to be a scoring threat, but he's a great defender and going to help you have depth on the defensive end. Like you said, Kevon Looting is scoring in double figures. That's your sign that it's just not your night if you're the Dallas Mavericks.
This is pretty good. Of course, our Federated Media group of stations, one of our other stations, is also going to be here tonight. We'll just share that. But we've got one of our remote techs, Caleb, and I'm glad that you got in here and got set up. One of our remote techs got locked out. He can't get in. He can't get in the
I was
door.
Able to just pull the truck right up. And
yeah, you got here early.
Up.
See, that's the thing. You get here on time, but, you know, the other guys, they're not there on time. They got locked out. But anyway, we're waiting for Colts at Bat tonight. Nyheim Hines is going to be here at Parkview Field, and we hope you will be too. Stop by and see us. We're broadcasting live out here at the Centerfield Concourse. You will find the 1380 The Fan table broadcasting live. Where are we? We're just toward the right field side.
Yes.
Of where Colts at Bat will be taking place out here in Centerfield.
We're pretty close to the summit in the outfield. So if you know where those steps are, leading up deep in the outfield before the hotels and that complex, we're right by the picnic tables there.
I will say this, Connor's Rooftop up there, they got a perfect view of all the festivities going on. That they're overlooking basically where the Colts at Bat is set up out here at center field at the Parkview Field, the center field concourse here at Parkview Field. We'll keep rolling. We've got Kristen Airy joining us at 4:35. Our number two, Nyheim Hines, will join the show coming up at 5:15, 5:20, somewhere right around there. And then Tommy Schegler will also join us for his regular Thursday visit. We roll on a Thursday edition of the Sports Rush, live from Parkview Field on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Yesterday on the show, we had Comas General Manager David Franke. One of the questions we asked him was about the affiliation with the Vegas Golden Knights, and he gave some reasons that the Comets would support an affiliation with the Golden Knights. One of those reasons, the Golden Knights, as they develop their organization, they're adding more players into the player pool, and hopefully that makes the affiliation arrangement grow. Well, we found out today, Justin Cohn has reported that the Comets and Vegas affiliation is no more. Vegas is going to go with the Savannah, what is it, the Ghost Nuts? What are they?
Ghost? Oh,
ghost
man.
Something? I don't know.
Ghost Pirates. That's what it is.
Ghost Monkeys.
Isn't it Ghost Pirates?
I think it is Ghost Pirates. Yeah. It's a silly nickname. But it's Savannah.
Nothing tops, though.
The Savannah Bananas were the baseball team in Savannah.
Well, and in keeping it down in the southeast, you have the Orlando Solar Bears, right?
Right.
So there's some good hockey, minor league hockey and baseball nicknames in that area.
Well, the whole story about the Savannah Bananas is really interesting as far as how a young guy, he was like 25 years old, bought the team because the stadium was old and run down. Nobody wanted to attend games. And, you know, he saw an opportunity. He seized it. He got the franchise for basically, you know, a dollar and a soft drink. I mean, he bought it for almost nothing and started doing these outrageous promotions because they had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And they, I mean, we're talking outrageous promotions, like the players break into dance right in the middle of an inning. And, you know, all of a sudden your players out on the field start going into this dance routine right in the middle of an inning. Or when they hit home runs, the dugout empties. All the players run through the aisles of the stadium high-fiving fans when one of their players hits a home run. They do all these crazy things. And they've actually now been invited on a tour. In the last couple of months, they toured and went to some minor league cities and had exhibition games. People absolutely love them. And the owner, who now is 30-some years old, it's almost like he is the ringmaster. Is that what it's called at the circus? I mean, he wears this long yellow tux, and he kind of hosts all the wild festivities. But you've got that going on down in Savannah. So for Savannah to call their hockey team the Ghost Pirates, I'm sure they had plenty of pressure to come up with something that would top the Savannah Bananas. Meanwhile, Pacers already jumping on this number 6 pick. They put out a post on Facebook listing 4 potential draft picks at number 6 based on the current mock drafts that are out there. And the 4 players that they listed, Shaedon Sharpe, Ben Mathurin from Arizona, Jaden Ivey from Purdue, and Keegan Murray from Iowa. And those are the 4 apparently that are most commonly mentioned by experts as being the 6th pick going to the Pacers. But, you know, the Pacers are embracing this. And actually, I don't know that I've seen a team put out, here's the people we're looking at and wait to see what fans' reaction is. Because you almost feel like that's what they're after. They want to know, how do the fans feel about this group of players?
Well, I think the obvious answer is everyone wants Jaden Ivey. Even if you're an IU fan, I think you'd want Jaden Ivey because he's a dynamic playmaker. Some of the other options, the only one I'm not familiar with at all is the kid from Arizona. Now, Shaedon Sharpe did not play last season for Kentucky, correct?
He did not play, but the year before he was the number one recruit out of high school.
Did he reclassify?
Well, that's
did he
a
just
good,
have an injury?
That's a good question. Well, he wasn't eligible, and so I don't know if he had not completed in high school the required classes to be designated as a freshman. I don't know really how that all transpired, but he enrolled at Kentucky. Then it was determined he wasn't eligible to play at Kentucky. He was allowed to participate in practice, and from all accounts, he dominated Kentucky practices and was by far the best player at practice on a daily basis. But you know, whose word are we taking when we hear that? Is that Coach Cal just trying to sell another one of his Kentucky guys at the top of the draft? But Shaedon Sharpe, I don't know what you get with him. And so he's a little bit of a wild card. And it would be interesting, I think, if you end up with pick number 6 and maybe the guard out of Arizona. We'll call him Ben because I really don't know how to pronounce his last name. But if Ben and Keegan Murray both get selected, which in the mock draft I saw, they were going 3 and 4 or 4 and 5. Now the draft I saw had Sharpe going number 3. But what if Sharpe and Ivy are both there? You know exactly what you get with Ivy. You know you satisfy a fan base, but you might have a guy that is a generational talent in Shaedon Sharpe. Nobody really knows because he didn't play college basketball last year. So we'll see what happens. But that's the quartet that the Pacers themselves posted. Now, I looked at the mock drafts, a couple of them, and was kind of just fiddling through last night, Caleb. And I counted maybe 10, 11, 12 players that you kind of felt were immediate impact players in this draft. I haven't really determined if there's, when I say immediate impact, guys that could have the potential to start and contribute, but not necessarily stars, not necessarily all-stars. Now, probably averages would tell you what, there's four or five guys in this draft that have the potential to be an all-star, maybe three or four. You just don't know which three or four. I mean, I remember the Zion Williamson draft, and it seemed like, you know, that was a guarantee, you know, bet your house on Zion Williamson being the next superstar in the NBA. And, of course, we've seen what's happened with injuries. Greg Oden was the same way. It was between Oden and Durant on who you take number one. Mm-hmm. And that was a draft where everybody said, you've got to take Oden. He's going to be, you know, a dominant big man for the next 12 to 15 years. You've got to have Oden. They took Oden in Portland. In fact, Kevin Pritchard, I think, was on the staff in Portland when they took Oden. And, well, didn't work out. Durant ended up being the star out of that draft. So,
well, and it only got to that point because Brandon Roy had injuries with Portland, and they had a good run, but then Brandon Roy was slowing down, and then they get Oden. So you're thinking, okay, you can team those guys up and put something together, and it just never worked out that way.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Your questions, comments, or suggestions. Big race coming up a week from Sunday down in Indianapolis. They call it the Indianapolis 500. Caleb, you might have heard of this race.
Heard of it. Been there.
Yeah, been there, done that. So is Chris Denary. He is going to be on the radio team in turn four. He is also the play-by-play voice of the Indiana Pacers. We'll talk to Chris Denary about both subjects when we come back. Broadcasting live from Parkview Field ahead of the Colts at bat. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Live from Parkview Field, it is Colts at bat night with the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. That means Nyheim Hines, Colts running back, is going to be here live and in person signing autographs for the fans. Gates will open up at 5:35, and if everything goes according to schedule, we expect to have Nyheim Hines visit with us here on the Sports Rush around 5:15. Right now, we have a guest joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. This guy wears a lot of hats during the course of the year, and this is probably one of the busier months, even though the Pacers aren't in the playoffs, because it is Indy 500 race month, and Chris Denary will be broadcasting from turn four come May 29th for the Indianapolis 500. He joins us right now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Good afternoon, Chris.
Hey, good afternoon, Brett. How are you?
Good afternoon, Brett. How are you?
I'm good, and it was that was just a quick test just to make sure all of it, everything technically was working, and it was great to have you respond because it means you hear me, I hear you. Everything's working great. Let's talk first about the Pacers before we get to the race. Pacers find out they're the number six pick in the upcoming draft. Could have been anywhere from number one to number nine. The initial reaction, I think, for most people that follow the Pacers was some disappointment. I think it's a great spot to be because I think the Pacers have the opportunity, if they really want somebody, to get aggressive and try to make a deal to move up. I'm not necessarily opposed to moving down. They've got a lot of flexibility sitting there at number six. What's your reaction and thought now that you've had a chance to kind of absorb it a little bit that the Pacers sit at number six in the upcoming draft?
Yeah, I would agree with you exactly what you said. We had a draft lottery party on Tuesday night that I emceed, and as we were watching the ESPN telecast, you know, 9, 8, 7, you know, you were excited to see those numbers go by, and then there was, I think, some disappointment at 6. But I do think it's a deep draft. There are a lot of talented players. You know, people focus maybe on the top 3 or 4, but if you look at some of the names that should be around, around the number six pick, I think that player will definitely help the Pacers. And as Kevin Pritchard said, this is an important summer. He feels it's a summer they can be aggressive because they have plenty of cap space. They can move up. They can move down. They've got the first pick of the second round. That's number 31. It's almost like having a first-round pick, so you don't have to pay first-round money. And then they have the last pick of the second round. So I think there are a lot of opportunities for the Pacers to be active however they want to do it.
You know, it's interesting that the Pacers put out a post showing four of the names that have been common among mock drafts. And I thought the only benefit they get here is to see how fans react to these four players. Is fan reaction, is that something the Pacers are looking at here? Is that going to impact who they take at number six if they stick at number six?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if it would have been fan reaction, let's go back 35 years ago, the Pacers would have taken Steve Alford and not Reggie Miller, and we know how that impacted the franchise over about a 20-year period. But I think what's going on right now is the draft combine in Chicago. There's an opportunity early on to meet with these players, interview them, those types of things. And then hopefully at the end of this month and into the early stages of June, you will have some of these players visit. Now, the caveat is the Pacers have not been in this position in a long time to have a single-digit pick. So how many of these players will actually want to work out? You know, when the Pacers have drafted anywhere from 13 to 25, well, all of those players want to work out because they're trying to improve their draft stock. When you're looking at a top six pick, most of those players know that they're going to fall in that area. So I don't know how hungry they are to actually work out for those teams. We're already seeing, just reading some of the reports in Chicago, you know, a lot of those players are not participating in the five-on-five. But, no, I don't think, you know, fan sentiment, while they're important, we love the fans and know how important they are to the organization, that's not going to play a role in how the Pacers make their moves going forward.
A lot of people talk about having the franchise guy. When you look at the Pacers right now, is the franchise guy on the team, or are the Pacers looking to draft their future franchise guy?
That's a great question. I do think when they made the trade to get Tyrese Halliburton, Tyrese has come to Indianapolis and embraced the city and embraced the organization. And he's a guy that put up some outstanding numbers last year in year two, and especially when he was with the Pacers. He averaged a near double-double, 18 points and 10 assists. So he clearly is a guy that they want to build around. It's so important to have the guy that is going to lead the team. And I still think, a lot of people are waiting to see as Miles Turner comes back from his injury that cost him the last 40 or so games. I mean, this is a guy that now is looking at his opportunity without Domantas Sabonis. And I really think, Miles is embracing this. And so I don't think, even with the sixth pick, I'm not sure that is going to be, he's going to be a star. He's going to be an excellent player. But to say that guy is going to be the face of the franchise, I think the Pacers will have a number of faces of the franchise that they hope that they can build over the next 3 to 5 years. At the event the other night, it was Tyrese Halliburton, Isaiah Jackson, and Dwayne Washington. Those are three guys I believe the Pacers are really counting on over the next 3 to 5 years as they grow together. And you keep adding pieces to that. That's what has the fan base excited. You know, Brett, it was a tough year, 25 wins. It was the third worst year in Pacers franchise NBA history. And so I think everybody's ready to wash your hands of that. 0-0 going forward. Let's make something happen in the summer.
Of course, teams that are not 0-0. In fact, it's 1-0 in both the East and the West right now. Just getting your reaction on what we're seeing here in the conference finals. The Heat took care of business against Boston, dominated one quarter of that basketball game, and that was enough to get the win in game one. To be honest, I still like Boston in this series. I think it may go 6 or 7, but I still like Boston. I think it's great news they get Marcus Smart, now Horford, back. When you look at the East, do you buy the Heat?
Well, I buy the Heat just because, you know, they're such a great defensive team. I'm like you, though. I picked Boston before the series started. Before these Final Four teams, I picked Boston and Golden State in the finals. Now, if you go back a few weeks, I really thought it was going to be a rematch of last year with Milwaukee and Phoenix. But if you look at this Eastern Conference matchup, these are two of the best defenses in the NBA. They are the two teams in the Eastern Conference that over the last 10 years have made the most Eastern Conference Finals appearances, both Boston and Miami. So you would say no surprise to see them trying to represent the Eastern Conference. But it will be good for Boston to have both Smart and Horford back. I saw Derek White will not be available tonight. He is awaiting the birth of a child. But still, to have those two starters back in Smart and Horford, they were sorely missed the other night in Game 1.
I don't know what the NBA protocol is, and maybe you can fill me in, Chris. I'm not sure if you even know how Horford ended up eligible for this game when he was on the health and safety protocol list 2 days ago.
Well, the key is you have to have negative tests, and it's either a 5-day period or multiple negative tests. And so my assumption is, just following from afar, that he's had enough negative tests that moved him from out to doubtful to questionable to now the ability to play. So it's all based on the testing, and so much has changed over the last year. If we all remember, you know, if you had COVID or you were in a 10-day type situation where you had to be clear for 10 days. That has since been reduced down to 5. And again, I believe in Al Horford's situation, if you are not showing symptoms and you have multiple negative tests, then that frees you up to have the opportunity to play. So I'm assuming that's how Horford gets back out on the floor.
Out West, Golden State has been so good at home, and you know, it's so tough to beat Golden State at the Chase Center out there in San Francisco. But, you know, I went into this series, I'll be honest, I was one of the few that kind of liked Dallas because I thought they were going to go into this series with the best player, maybe the hottest player in the entire playoffs. And, you know, and Luka got kind of shut down, didn't play all that well in Game 1. Is that the tone set for this series? Have I been bamboozled in believing that Dallas has a chance?
No, I don't think you've been bamboozled. I mean, when you have a player of the ilk of Luka Doncic, I think you can feel good about Dallas's prospects. You know, one of the things that happened, just look back in the previous series, they lost the first two games and then won 4 of the last 5. And one of the reasons was it wasn't because Doncic did a whole lot more. I mean, he averaged about 35 in the series. It's the other Mavericks stepped up. Guys that they've had on that roster for a while. And so I think that's going to be that's going to be very important for Dallas because they're going to put a lot of pressure on Doncic, and he turned it over. I think he had 7 turnovers in Game 1. That's a rarity for him. But other Dallas players have to step up as they did in the series against Phoenix for them to have a chance to win this series.
Chris Denary joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Of course, with it being the month of May, it is all about the Indianapolis 500 in the state of Indiana and qualifying coming up this weekend. What do you see as the big storylines going into this weekend, Chris?
Well, you know, there's so many young drivers, and we've seen that in the course of the start of this IndyCar season in 2022, you know, just how talented they are. And some of the veterans, in fact, have taken a back seat. I mean, we all are familiar with who won last year in Elio Castroneves and Scott Dixon, but you have the Colton Herta's and those types of drivers that are trying to make their mark in the series. So that's the thing that I think I'll be watching, especially as we fast forward in a week. I'll be very active that final weekend at Carburation Day and, of course, sitting in Turn 4 on race day to see, you know, will one of these young drivers who is up and coming have a chance to win the race, or will it default back to a veteran who has plenty of experience at the 2.5-mile oval? That will be the fascinating thing to watch, and there will be so many fans, you know, really rooting for somebody like Elio Castroneves to make history. I mean, he joined history last year, but could he make history in 2022?
Is Jimmy Johnson going to bring a new set of fans to the racetrack this year?
I think he does. I mean, you know, he has such a great name from his great success in NASCAR. So there's clearly going to be some fans that have followed his career and not necessarily IndyCar that will, you know, make the month of May a priority and make watching or listening to the Indianapolis 500 maybe something they haven't done before. So it will be fascinating to watch Jimmy. You know, he joined the series as a road course racer and now making the move to the ovals. That'll be something to watch here this weekend, especially in qualifying and then leading up to the race next weekend.
Chris, I know you're up in turn four. Tell me, describe to me the perch where you actually broadcast from. This is not a press box with a nice buffet.
No, it's not. In fact, I remember the first time they took me up there, I had joined the radio network as a pit reporter, and Bob Lamy, the former voice of the Colts, had retired in turn four, and they said, hey, what do you think about going up in turn four? I said, absolutely, I'd love to do it. And when they took me out there, I said, I don't think I want to go up there. And they said, well, if you're going to report from turn four, that's where you have to be. It's maybe not as high as some of the other locations. I've been in turn two and turn three. You have covering. You do not have a covering in turn four. You're basically in a basket off the back of the grandstands on the outside of the track. And really where I sit is really where the straightaway starts. So I have a view that I can see the cars going into three, into the short chute, and then as they exit turn number four. But you're right. There's a room in the, there's room in the basket for myself and a spotter. There might be room for a couple of other people to get there. But yeah, by no means do we have a buffet lunch up there as we're calling the race.
What do you take up there with you? When you go up for race day, first of all, how many hours is it? That's got to be, what, 5 hours or so that you're going to spend up there?
Yeah, you know, Green Flag will be this year. We'll go on the air at 11. Green Flag is somewhere around noon. I'm probably up there at 11:15 to 11:30. So, yeah, I mean, depending on the race, I mean, you're up there 4 or 5 hours. You try to drink as much as you can, but not enough where you have to go to the bathroom because it's a long way to go down. And once the race starts, you really don't have time to do that. For us, we really can't take an umbrella up there. If it's windy, that umbrella is going to blow away. You make sure you've got some food, you have some water. You've got, if it's a hot day, you have some cold towels you can put on your neck. You got to make sure you wear a hat up there. And then I have the radio equipment that the engineering staff already has up for me. All I really have to take up is my headset with the microphone. So, you know, I've got my information that I've compiled over the month, those types of things on a clipboard. You know, there's not a lot that you take up there because even though you're up there for 4 or 5 hours, you just try to make do.
How many years have you done it, Chris?
This will be number 23 in turn number four.
Wow.
So coming up
wow.
on 25 years, which will be something special. Like I said, back in the 90s when I was asked to be a part of it, it was a real thrill. And, you know, to be up there and call so many iconic races. I remember back in 2006 when it looked like Marco Andretti as a teenager might win and Sam Hornish Jr. passed him as they were exiting turn four, really at the start-finish line. J.R. Hildebrand back in 2011 had the lead. He was going to win, and he crashed in turn four, and that set the stage for Dan Weldon to win. There have been so many great moments to call, and sure hoping that we have another one a week from Sunday.
What's the one call that if I said, Chris, give me the one defining moment you had at the Indy 500, is there one that sticks out?
Well, I would think the 2006, as Marco Andretti was in the short shoot exiting four, I said, can a teenager win in Indianapolis? And I also mentioned, in fact, I had a conversation with Jay Quir the other day. It sure looked, as all the guys in front of me had it, it sure looked like Marco was going to win. And then all of a sudden, here comes Sam Hornish. So as I threw it to Mike King, at that time, the voice of the 500, I mentioned, you know, can a teenager win in Indianapolis? And here comes Sam Hornish. I've just had people tell me that's one of the calls that resonates with them the most, as well as the Hildebrand crash in turn four.
Of course, the leaving it open to the fact that, you know, Marco might not win because everybody right. else was kind of just handing Marco that win. And you left that question out there and left it open. What about a call that haunts you? Is there one? I know, you know, as a broadcaster, I think so often we're almost perfectionists, and it's not necessarily the calls that, you know, we're happy with. It's that one call we might have missed or could have done different. Is there one call that you can think of in all the years you've done it where you thought, boy, I really kind of missed that one?
Oh, yeah. We talk about this all the time. Since there's 200 laps, we're not calling every lap of the race. But, you know, we probably call at least half of them. Maybe we call 100 of them. And I clearly have missed some things at some point in the race. And you sort of beat yourself up. But you're glad that you did it on lap 22 or 32 or 52. You don't want to do it lap 192 and above, because those are the things that people remember. So, no, there's no question. There's no question, Brett. There, at some point, a week from Sunday, I'll say something and make a mistake, but I don't want it to be after lap 190.
Just can't imagine what that's like to have, you know, that quick window to be able to get out something that's meaningful, that's, you know, explains the situation well. And you guys are amazing at the way you're just seamless in getting cars around that track and listening to the race. It's always a joy. And I know I tell you this every year, that each year you guys do, you know, go one step further in amazing me. I think it's one of the best broadcasting teams in all of sports, and you do a great job there, Chris. Appreciate the time. I know it's a busy time for you with the race and all, but I certainly appreciate you jumping on with us.
All right. Look forward to doing it again this summer. Thanks, Brett.
Yep, that is Chris Denary joining us here on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. We're live at Parkview Field. We are awaiting Nyheim Hines' arrival, plus Blue, the Colts cheerleaders, and so much more. It's Colts at bat tonight here at Parkview Field with the Tin Caps and the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.